And so I bought one, and I had about $300 in my pocket, and everything else was invested in this automobile. Wife and baby, we got in the car.
The old Rocket here. 8, the 88 convertible, right?
Yeah, actually, it was a 98. That was the big one.
The big one, yep.
The bigger
one.
Yeah. And I guess it took me 6 weeks to sell the car for about $50 more than I paid for it. I'll never forget that.
But the first writing you did for television. I could look at the sheet here, but yeah, you know.
The first, I was partnered with a fellow by the name of Ed Simmons, a very good writer, still writing. And Eddie and I were selling baby pictures and such door to door. We had an idea one day for Danny Thomas. And I got Danny Thomas on the phone through some old ruse. And you want to hear the old ruse?
Yeah, I do.
Yes.
Yeah, but I want to do the commercial first, all right? Okay. We're with Norman Lear, creator of many great television programs, Sunday Dinner, the newest on CBS at 8 Central, 8 Eastern. We'll be right back, and we'll get to you on the toll-free exchange right after these messages. The ruse that you used to get a hold of Danny Thomas.
Oh, I want to talk to the first caller.
You do?
Yeah.
All right. Well, you're the producer. Michael Michael in Baltimore, hello.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Michael. Say hello to Norman Lear.
Hi, Norman Lear.
Hello there.
If you'll pardon the redundancy, I'm a religious Jew, uh-huh. And I find it ironic that I'm calling you, Mr. Lear, because I'm a big fan of someone you're often at loggerheads with, Phyllis Schlafly.
You're a big fan of Phyllis Schlafly.
No yeah. Kidding. No uh-huh. Kidding.
Yeah, I am, because my politics are conservative, and yours oftentimes seem to be liberal. But I must applaud your effort in this venture of yours to reflect what must be a growing trend among Americans, and that is a search for meaning in their lives through religion. Since I'm a religious Jew, I certainly want to see more of that reflection on television. And since you're dealing with the topic, as you always have been a pioneer, a trendsetter, I think it's wonderful that you're doing it. I wonder if you've noticed, as I have, the last 10 years, even the producers in Hollywood and directors like Spielberg on movies like E.T. and Close Encounters of the Third Kind and Ghost and other kinds of movies, Fields of Dreams, have all been dealing with religious themes,
mm-hmm.
as if there's an awakening around the world of people wanting there to be the Messiah coming. Everybody's hoping for...
What's the question?
Well, the question is, have you noticed... You're not a copycatter, you're a trendsetter. I don't think you're just capitalizing on something which is popular. I think you must have your finger on it, on a trend here, and this is something important for the American people to deal with.
Well, I don't know when you tuned in, but I was talking earlier about a drift we've, as a culture, have been making to a numbers-oriented society where everything is numbers, and where we only deal with the quantifiable. In the area of the unquantifiable comes all the things. It comes art and music and all of the instincts that give us all the beauty and truth and goodness in life, and religion. Some people find God. Most everybody, research shows us, finds God each in their own way, but out of that same basic instinct.
What about Norman Lear and God? Are you a more religious man now than you were 20 years ago, 30 years ago?
No, I've never been. Religion, I assume, means connected to a specific church. I mean, I was born Jewish, and I'll die Jewish, and
this is true.
And I hope my grandfather hears me. He's been gone a great many years. But because that's the only religious training I had is when I, for the few years I lived with my granddad.
So, but even if you don't go to temple every week, even if you don't observe the holidays of your faith, mm-hmm. in the last 10 years or 15 years, in just your daily life or the way you approach life, do you find yourself going back to the things that your grandfather told you? And do you find yourself placing more stock in the dogmas that you were taught as a boy?
I find myself thinking more and more about what connects us, all of us, and wishing to, you know, not forget but table what disconnects us until we can, all of us, remember sufficiently what connects us. We're sitting across the table here for a radio audience, and I'm looking at Mr. Snyder, and I see two eyes and a nose and a mouth and two arms, just like I have. So if I were all alone someplace and had been alone for a long time, and I saw those two arms and two eyes and a nose, I would recognize another human being, and I would...
Connection, yeah.
And I would, my God, there's another human being. But there is something else that connects us, and you, Michael, and others, that we can't see, but I think is as tangible. Once you start to talk about it, once you connect on that level, is as tangible as what you can see. And that is the capacity to talk about this subject. What we have not been doing sufficiently, I believe, as a culture, is talking about it. Everybody's got this rationale that it's too personal, and we're too afraid of trotting on the other guy's religion. That's not what connects us, the other guy's religion. That's what we can talk about and disagree about. What connects us is his capacity to find his religion and mine. That's the same capacity.
All right, here's Mark in Chicago. Hi, Mark, you're on.
Good evening.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Tom. Good evening, Mr. Lear. I was just, you know, listening to you before as you were talking about television 10, 15 minutes ago. I'm wondering if either one of you agree, as I have felt this year, that this year TV hit a new low. There are fewer shows on TV that I watch on a regular basis than I can ever remember, and the shows that are on seem to be jumping all over. The schedulers have been, you know, like dealing shows, moving them all over the place. You can't find anything you like if you wanted to 2 weeks in a row. It's funny, I can only think of three shows that I watch on a regular basis.
What are those?
Cheers.
Right.
L.A. Law.
Right.
And 60 Minutes. And strangely enough...
Well, you mentioned three of the very best, you know.
Well, they are three of the very best, but the amazing thing is two of them took a very long time to get going.
Yes.
Cheers, when it started, was the last rated show.
That's right.
And 60 Minutes, I don't know if anybody remembers.
7 years it tried to...
opposite Marcus Welby.
Yeah, 7 years it tried to find an audience. Couldn't find one.
And they had the fortune of being put on in behind the greatest lead-in you could possibly have, NFL football, especially when they ran over their time.
Right.
I think it takes
But
time.
To go back to what you said about this season being the worst, I don't think, and then I want Norma to speak to this, I don't think this has been an especially bad television season.
It's hard for me to comment. I haven't seen all that much. I can't sit four nights a week and watch television. I've never been that passive. It just doesn't do me any good.
And by the way, I think more and more people are becoming like you, Norman Lear. I think more and more people are saying, I don't want to devote 4 hours a night, five nights a week, six nights a week to sitting and watching television. I don't know what the ratings say about miniseries, but to make a commitment to watch 4 hours of television over a Sunday and Monday night for a story that I really don't have that much of an interest in to begin with is not, I don't think, I think a lot of people say, I don't want to do this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you what else is missing from television. Reality is missing from television. Television is fantasy land. Even the commercials are fantasy land. Every airline flight is perfect. The rent-a-car is always waiting. The good times are available at every restaurant, no matter what the food tastes like. On all the television programs, the sitcoms, it's happy endings, and the kids are smart, and everybody's smiling, and it's not the real world that we're seeing on television.
Yeah, now let's think about the average guy and his family. Who are watching all of these messages on television, all of this, all of these shows that you're talking about, and those commercials? They use all the same products. They live in the same country, but they're not running down the beach, slapping each other on the back, or dancing in a $500 tuxedo with a beautiful lady. They're not sitting in the bar, clapping each other on the, you know, drinking, hoisting beers,
true,
and so forth.
True.
They're not having that good a time.
No.
But yet the rest of the world on television is so. There's somebody up north, Michael Lerner, who edits a magazine in San Francisco, has talked about the shame, a sense of shame that that working class Americans might develop over a culture, in a culture in which every imprint seems to tell you that the country's having a great time.
Yeah, right. Everything's great.
And
it's not. Here's the other thing television has done that never happened before in the history of the world till there was television. People get to see how the other half lives. Mm-hmm. Think about it. In 1700, nobody knew how the king lived. Now everybody knows how the king lives. We see his toilets. We see his bedroom. We see his chambers. We see his cars. We see, well, you know, the have-nots see the haves and vice versa. I have to pause here for the sponsors. We'll continue with Norman Lear. And I hope to get to some of you on the toll-free line right after these messages, but I'm going to get to the Danny Thomas ruse as well. We'll be right back. We're back with Norman Lear, and I only have a minute or so left. Marcia in Roseburg, Oregon. Hello. Very quickly, please.
Yes, sir. I would like to say, first of all, that I have appreciated your shows, Mr. Lear. What I'm calling about is, I guess you'd say media bias is about as prevalent as Hollywood bias is, and I would like to ask you a question on this.
Go ahead, quickly, please.
Okay. Are we going to see some of the young stars of this show attending church without having to have, like, grandma or aunt or uncle or someone dragging, kicking and screaming into church?
Well, I'm not, you know, we've done six shows, and I haven't got the lifetime of the show's worth of storylines, but I would assume you'll see all of that. That's the intention is to evoke the...
You know what she's getting at. She doesn't want religion and young people to be something that's forced down their throats by older people.
Oh, yes. Or she wants to be concerned, or she's interested in seeing younger people going to church of their own volition.
Right.
You could come from any direction. But let me put it this way, best way I can answer your question, ma'am, is whatever you feel about this and would wish, I hope the show will give you an opportunity to discuss this when you turn it off. We may not get it right, we may not satisfy you, but you'll have plenty to talk about in an area that doesn't usually elicit much discussion at home these days.
As the song says, who could ask for anything more, huh? Norman, thanks for being with us tonight.
Oh, I loved it, thank you.
Maybe sometime down the road you'll come back and tell us about the Danny Thomas ruse, but not tonight. Norman Lear, Sunday Dinner, CBS Sundays, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm T.S., and this is the Wednesday Night Radio Show out of Los Angeles, California. Once again, hi everybody, I'm Tom Snyder, and welcome back to the Nightside Hour of your radio show now. Late on Wednesday, early on Thursday, today is the 29th of May, 1991. Every night here we take your phone calls, and only your phone calls at 800-248-0852. If your radio station repeats our programming tonight, we have a great show tonight, Writer's Night. Jeffrey Archer, author, Norman Lear, television creator, coming up on the Thursday night radio show out of ABC in Los Angeles, Wednesday night out of ABC in Los Angeles, California. You know, I'm racing for the music, and I said Thursday night. Plus, for some reason, I want this week to be over with. Isn't it awful to wish your life away? It's a terrible thing to do, to want your life to pass more quickly than it normally does. Anyway, here is a strange item in the news today. You know, I was mentioning last night, it's getting more and more difficult to figure out the news. Here's one for you. You know who was arrested by the police in Los Angeles today? Rodney King, the man who was beaten in the March 3rd videotape for resisting arrest or for giving chase to police officers, was arrested today in the Silver Lake section of Los Angeles for picking up a transvestite prostitute. You want to believe this one? This came over the radio at 6 o'clock tonight on my way in here. He was picked up by the police. The police maintained that it was not a setup, that they noticed a car picking up this person, transvestite prostitute. Apparently that the prostitute was soliciting, or allegedly was soliciting. The individual, later identified as Rodney King, stopped the car. The woman, or the transvestite prostitute, this probably was a guy dressed as a woman. And I'll get to that in a second. Then the police pulled alongside for a routine questioning, and Rodney King, according to the radio account, pulled his car close to the officer's car or jumped up on the officer's car. I have hazy details on this. In any event, he was arrested. And now the district attorney's office in Los Angeles must decide whether or not Rodney King will be sent to jail for violating parole. You know, he was out on parole following a convenience store holdup when he was beaten on March the 3rd. And now he's picked up for having a transvestite prostitute enter his car. I don't know what the law is on that, but apparently it's against the law to have a transvestite prostitute get in your car. Don't ask me about this, but this is what he was picked up for. In any event, his attorney said that Mr. King is confused and that he is most remorseful about this situation. I would think that anybody who picks up, and I shouldn't say this, but I will anyway, a guy dressed as a woman. Of course, you know, there are some guys who really can fool you. As a matter of fact, there was a legendary story in Los Angeles involving Dave Stewart, who is now the great pitcher for the Oakland Athletics. Dave Stewart was a pitcher for the Los Angeles Dodgers. And he was picked up by a police officer caught in, how do they say, in flagrante delicto? Apparently, Dave had he was not fully dressed, and he was in the person of what he thought was a woman, and she was, how can I phrase this, performing an act of incredible admiration upon him, and as it turned out, it was a guy, and the cops caught Dave Stewart. This was in the paper. It was a scandal in Los Angeles when he pitched for the Dodgers. As a matter of fact, it might well have been instrumental in the Dodgers getting rid of him, to their detriment, by the way. He's one of the great pitchers in baseball. Anyway, you wonder how these things happen, and you know how this Rodney King thing happened. I won't even speculate, but Mr. King apparently is in trouble with the law again in Southern California tonight. All right, I'm going to pause now for all of you I'm going to pause for the radio, for the commercials. And then we will come right back. We'll be right back. Weird stories in the news after these messages. A transvestite prostitute. You know, I was just saying to Bob, can you imagine, I mean, can you imagine, and I don't want to be gross here, I don't want to gross out this audience, but can you just imagine if you're a guy and you're out with a woman and you know, you go to Lover's Lane and you park and you start groping around and you find out that you're with another guy? I mean, jeez. The radio show in Los Angeles, segue to credits, right? Don't put the laugh track up either. Jeez. The radio show in Los Angeles is produced by Paula Schuster and Debbie Alpert. The chief engineer and technical director is Robert DePriest, and the production associate is Lisa Erspalmer. In New York, New York tonight, we have the indefatigable Ralph DeLees on duty. A pleasure to see Ralph in New York just a week ago tonight, along with the able assistance of Beaumont Small. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, here and there, and thank you everywhere, the board operators and chief engineers at all of our radio stations across North America, for your help in producing the Wednesday night radio show. Here's Kevin in Brockton, Mass. Hello.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Well, Kevin.
What's kind of interesting is I had a transvestite. I used to drive a cab, and they get in the cab and wanted to have me to have their baby. And I thought I was...
Wait. They wanted you to what?
Have their baby. So I actually was kind of flattered because I thought it meant I was a man's man. So.
Jeez. Jeez. But, what, they get in your cab and they say, we want you to have our baby?
There was just one in the back.
Oh, my God. Jeez.
Yeah.
Hey, listen. Hey, you know, you know something, Kevin? Uh-huh. It's their America, too, you know?
That's right. The other side, I
hope. Wow.
Anyway, what it's calling about, it's a very important subject, is I'm concerned about Millie Bush and the contaminated water supply.
Now you know why you heard Looney Tunes. Jeez. You know what I loved yesterday? They stopped Bush on the golf course, and they said, you know, they're testing the water at the White House. He says, you got to be kidding. Yeah, I mean, even Bush couldn't believe how stupid, you know? Jeez, now they're testing the quail water, the Millie water. All the water is being tested.
Well, the thing is, it's like, you know, the dog has lupus, right?
Yeah.
And I guess they're testing it for a couple of things, at least, like iodine, they mentioned lithium.
Yeah.
For example, and stuff like that. And
now, tell me, I should know this and I don't. What is lupus?
Lupus, actually, someone that I know died of it recently, but
jeez.
I'm not sure exactly. It works on the lymph system or something like that.
It's a form of cancer, I'm told.
I'm not,
the dictionary. Keep talking.
Okay. Anyway, yeah, I'm actually very concerned about it because, like, I don't know much about iodine except for it's in the Morton salt and so forth. But with lithium, it can cause memory impairment, and I know that, and heart problems and stuff, and the memory impairment, and also...
Well, but that way, Bush could never remember that he said no new taxes.
Exactly. that's a major point, too. Like, I don't mind if they go after the presidents, and I didn't like it when they get rid of, you know, Kennedy gets set up and stuff, and I don't want them to off the dog, though. Yeah. And with the memory impairment, there may be something there, because, of course, Ron used to inhabit the office.
Yeah, right, right.
It's the same water.
Wait, let me...
Yeah, now George is going to be... It doesn't matter with Danny too much.
You people in Massachusetts are cruel. Lupus, any of several diseases characterized by skin lesions. I think if I had a dog with lupus, I'd think twice about keeping it.
Yeah. Actually, you know, it's something that's real on the serious side. On the lupus thing, I wasn't looking at that much, but I talked to one of the leading nutritionalists in the... actually, he's an allergist who works in the natural method in the country out of Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
State name was Martin Marshall.
Yeah, keep moving.
I'll keep the name off anyway. I was at a Bridgewater College down there. And he got the lady from Texas in charge of the Lupus Society to come up, and he was checking to see if she had any food allergy causing lupus, right? And, you know, it's a major disease, and what he found out is what usually happens is when someone has a food allergy, it's what they really like, they have a craving for.
Right, right.
And with this lady, he found out, found out it was eggs, and was injecting the whatever it was in the egg that caused the problem,
mm-hmm.
and then it would turn on the lupus symptoms, the lesions or whatever, and they withdraw it, and then she would, like, clear up. Type thing.
Yeah. Anyway, listen, Kevin, I want to move along here, but I thank you for calling.
Yeah, but he said it was the eggs. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. Wrap it up, Kevin.
Okay.
Jeez!
He said it was the eggs to her, and she flipped out saying, no, eggs are good for me. Eggs are fine. So they never get to handle lupus, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Kev.
Okay, bye.
All right, say a prayer for Millie Bush. Brad in St. Peter, Minnesota. Hello.
Tom.
Brad.
How are you tonight,
okay,
pal?
Thanks. How are you, pal?
Hey, you look great on TV, man. I caught you on Letterman.
How
do you keep yourself in such darn good shape?
I don't eat very much, and I walk 3 miles a day, 2.5-3 miles a day.
Well, you look great. You and Bob Barker got a lot in common with that silver hair.
You know, that's what steams me, is my hair is not that silver.
Hey.
I mean, it's got some silver in, but I've still got some black.
You look very, very distinguished.
Well, thank you. I appreciate
that. And I thought that was a great show. You carried the show that night, so to speak.
I'll tell you, you know, once again, I'm saving Letterman's career. This guy's he's in a fast fade now in the 10th year. And you know, this is the second time I've been back in a couple of months because he knows he's in trouble.
You know that the first time you were on, I set my alarm so I could wake up and watch you, but just couldn't do her. But I caught you last Friday.
Thanks, I appreciate that, Brad.
Calling you about that deal with Letterman. Did you hear about this comedian, Sandra Bernhard? She's apparently dumping Letterman for Arsenio Hall.
You're kidding.
Apparently she's tired of appearing on the show, and she says he doesn't give her anything to work off of, so...
No
she's
kidding. No, she's...
But... material or just go... She says go completely or nuclear on him, I guess. So
that means that she won't be on with him anymore?
Well, I didn't know you had a choice. Isn't that something that they ask you to do, or do you get paid to do anything like that, or?
They do pay you for Letterman. I don't know what it is. Whatever the scale is for that show, it's about $400 or something like that. But Sandra Bernhard said she's going to go with Arsenio Hall?
Apparently.
Huh. Well, that means we'll see more of Terry Garr on the Letterman show.
Hey, we can do that anytime.
Well, I don't understand that booking.
I'm getting ready to take the plunge Saturday.
You're getting married?
You got it.
Congratulations to you.
Well, I picked the right woman.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. Hey, I don't think you, remember me, I'm the friend of Mr. Hubbard.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, but I don't mention...
We're not going to talk about him.
No, I don't mention Stan anymore.
We're not going to talk about him tonight anymore.
Happy marriage, Brad.
Hey, Tom, you have a good night now.
All right, let me know how it comes out after the honeymoon, okay?
You bet.
And I tell you, my wife and I, the early part of our marriage was fine, but then we walked out of the church.
Say, Tom, why is it that you don't talk about your marriage that much?
Well, because it was a failed marriage, and I don't like to talk about failures, and I also respect the privacy of my former wife.
Well, it sounds to me like you have a beautiful daughter and a beautiful grand. It's a daughter, right?
Yeah.
Give my best to him, Tom.
I shall indeed. Good night, Brad.
You have a good night now.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. This could be going better from my view. However, it's my fault, you know, I'm not communicating with the listener tonight. The listeners are fine, you know, and we'll get back to more of you on the toll-free line. You're an interesting group, and I'm going to be better for you right after a station break. Okay, we are back. Now, for those of you who are still to call tonight, you know, when Paula picks up the phone, she says, good evening to Tom Snyder's show. What do you want to talk to Tom about? What I want you to say is, Paula, I want to talk to Tom for about 2 minutes, and then stick to it. You know what I mean? She'll say, what do you want to talk to Tom about? Say, about 2 minutes, and then stick to it. That way, everybody gets a turn. Bruce in Boston, hello.
Yeah, hi, Tom.
Hi, Bruce. I'm good, thanks.
I'd like to talk about criminals paying for the crimes. Hold on a second. I got to kill a roach. Trying to take my supper away, Tom. Damn it. little pesky little roach. You know, God really had a sense of humor.
And I'll wait a second. Wait. Hold on. Was there really a roach there?
Yes, there was.
Okay.
I am telling you the truth.
Okay. Because now what will happen is every caller and I say, hold it. I just can't.
So God really had a sense of humor when he created roaches and mosquitoes.
Isn't
huh?
that the truth? Yeah.
All right. Anyway,
and when he created us, too.
Excuse me?
I say when he created us.
Yeah, right. I'd be kind of interesting creatures, yeah. Criminals paying for their crimes. It seems you just lock them away and it costs us, what, $27,000 a year?
Except most criminals... I mean, you know, like a robber has no money or he wouldn't rob you. How can he pay you back?
What's that?
I say a robber who robs you for your money, he can't pay you back because he wouldn't rob you if he had any money.
Well, that's true. Well, anyway, I like to see him make restitution for the crimes.
Well, now, that's a different thing, and you're absolutely right. What we do is we put people in jail rather than have them make restitution.
Yeah, I think there'd be a lot less crimes, you know, criminals to... returning to jail, you know, it would be... You know,
well, except, you know, we do, like in the case of Milliken. He had to do so many hundred hours of community service
right.
as part of his... in some cases, we do offer programs of restitution, but not as often as we might. Bruce, thanks for calling us tonight.
Psychologists... Tom?
Yeah.
Yeah, psychologists, they're trying to do a good job, but, you know, they're not working at all. It just seems they say that... Half the criminals of
Bruce,
victims
do, Bruce,
society.
Bruce, let's not run this point into the ground, okay?
Okay.
Bruce, thanks for calling them.
Okay.
Thank you, pal.
All right.
Bye-bye. Greg in Eugene, Oregon. Hello.
Hello, Tom.
Hi, Greg.
Jesus, I can't believe every time I call, it's always something different. First, it's check your emissions night. Now, it's transvestite in the car night and roaches. good grief.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, I just saw something in the paper here real quick. I just wanted to mention to you, on the West Coast, the top... 5 ranking diseases,
mm-hmm.
bacterial meningitis, salmonella poisoning, Hodgkin's disease, measles, and thumb sucking.
I'm getting out of here.
Anyway, the reason I wanted to call you is I wanted to thank you for having Barbara Honecker on your show last week.
You're welcome. I don't know if we shed any light on anything, but it was just good to hear her talk about it all.
Well, I think you had some reservations that I wanted to question. You
yeah.
mentioned that as I diligently took notes, that you said that we shouldn't be fanatical about this. But you know why shouldn't we be? I mean,
no. What I said was, or what I meant to say, or tried to leave the impression was. If the investigation, and I'm all in favor of a congressional investigation about that whole time span back there,
uh-huh.
but the investigation should not be to get George Bush or to get Ronald Reagan. That's not what should be the issue. The issue is, was the law of this country broken by people as part of a political campaign?
Or were two people hold office illegally through covert action.
No question about that. But if the motivation of the committee, and forgive me.
Go ahead.
Investigating it is to punish Bush or Reagan, then that's the wrong reason to go after it.
Well,
I want to find out what if procedures were in order as part of. Wait, I got to stand by for after the station break.
Okay.
Hold on. It's going to be a long-winded night here, and I'm very, very frustrated, but, hey, what do you want from me, you know? I'm only the radio talk show host. Now these messages. Okay, we are back, and let's wind it up here with Greg in Eugene, Oregon. Okay, go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, you were mentioning about we shouldn't be fanatical. I was...
I said we should not be fanatical in terms of conducting an investigation to punish George Bush or Ronald Reagan. That's not should be, if that's the purpose of the exercise, it's going to become so partisan that it will not advance at all.
Well, you know, I think the people that are the ones that are thinking that everyone else is being fanatical who wants to find out about the truth to the October surprise are the people who are supporting. Who support George Bush and Ronald Reagan and their idiotic policies. I mean, I'm not claiming that it's, you know, fanatical or anything. I thought that you had made that statement, and it appears that some, you know, other people are saying that, like the Republicans, people that, you know, like I said, that support George Bush and Ronald Reagan.
Okay, so how do you think it should be handled?
As any other investigation.
Very good.
Handled, you know, just get to the bottom of the truth, and if there was some wrongdoing, punish the guilty parties. That's all there is to it.
Exactly. Hey, I'm for that 100%.
Absolutely.
All right, thank you.
How's your golf game?
Lousy. Although I had 85 today.
Oh, pretty good.
That's the first time I broke a 90 in a long time. I was 85 today.
Okay.
And I won $32. And it's all in my pocket. Thanks for calling, Greg.
Okay, Tom.
All right,
bye-bye.
Jack in Cambridge. Hello.
Hello, Tom.
Hi, Jack.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
You know what the Logan Act is?
Oh, yeah, but I can't remember it off the top of
my head. I think that's what they tried to accuse Jesse Jackson of in terms of when he went to Syria.
Oh, yeah, acting on behalf of American foreign policy as a private citizen.
Exactly. You see, the difference, though, with Jesse and what George Bush and Ronald Reagan are being accused of, Jesse was attempting to get an American out of captivity, while George and Ronald wanted to keep the Americans...
In captivity.
Yeah. That's right. They want to keep them in the cages over there in Iran, so that they could get elected, so Jimmy Carter wouldn't be
Well, Mr. Bonnie Sandra, we don't want you to release the hostages. We want you to keep them. Oh, okay, Ron.
That's right. And, of course, there was the whole idea of...
Wouldn't that be terrible if that... Wouldn't that be awful if that happened?
I don't think it would be that shocking. I mean, this is America. Look at Rodney King. I mean, look up transvestite in the dictionary.
And it's a person who dresses up in the clothing of the opposite gender.
Yeah, you see, you look up and you see a picture there of, let's say Geraldine or something. I just say, you know, everybody needs a hobby, but this is ridiculous. let me ask you, did you see that Hollywood parade, the war parade?
Bits and pieces of it, yeah.
You see the float of the tank floating down the Hollywood Boulevard?
No, I don't think so.
The M1 tank, they had a float up in the tank, you know, it was beautiful. It's sort of...
When I see Lisa Gibbons and Bob Eubanks hosting a parade, I don't pay that much attention to it.
Well, I think that tank float epitomizes the Reagan-Bush administration, epitomizes America, you know, and I think that should be deflated and put in a time capsule because it's so bizarre. I talk about crazy policies, the last fellow was talking about. I don't know, but I have to think that George Bush, the truth should come out of what happened with the October surprise, and the American people are not the enemy. Let's get to the bottom. Let's get the Congress off the stick here, off the dime, and...
Find out what happened.
Well, we know that President Reagan sent thousands of TOW missiles to the Ayatollah secretly, you know, and those were anti-tank missiles.
Well, you see, that's...
And also Hawk missiles, which are anti-aircraft.
But see, that's the interesting part. Right after, shortly after Reagan took office, all of a sudden this policy towards Iran, where they were the monsters and we would never send them anything, that began changing very slowly at first, and then as the 80s went on, more and more rapidly, until we got into the Iran-Contra affair. And inquiring minds like ours, Jack, want to know, hey, wait a second, did they make a deal on the hostages with a promise that they would, you know, ship arms later on? You know, let's face it, we live in cynical times. We live in very cynical times. I can understand that question.
Sad times, if you think that American people are left out of the loop, and that if someone could come to political power, the highest office in the land, making such a
deal. Here's where the whole October surprise falls apart in my view. Don't you think that if operatives for Reagan Bush Republican National Committee, Ronald Reagan and or George Bush, were in Paris, were meeting with representatives of the Ayatollah, had approached Bonnie Sadra by telephone or by cable, don't you think the White House would have found out about this? Don't you think that American intelligence would have picked up something somewhere that would have found out this clandestine operation was going on?
Well, according to Gary Sick, the Iranians demanded either Reagan or Bush show up in Paris. They wanted to deal directly with either the vice presidential candidate or the presidential candidate.
Okay, but don't you think Carter and the White House and the CIA and the FBI and whoever, military intelligence, would have known that something was going on?
I thought Jimmy Carter was in the Rose Garden only. But anyway, listen, I can only tell you that, with Rodney King and this whole fiasco, anything's possible.
Thanks for calling, Jack. All right, bye-bye. That's the thing I don't get, you know. Somebody would have found out. I mean, Iran-Contra came out. It didn't remain a secret. We eventually found out about it. And so if this happened, and we've been beating this horse now for weeks here, with all kinds of smoke and no fire and no proof, only allegations. But if it had been going on, I have to believe that somebody, somewhere within the intelligence-gathering apparatus of the government of the United States would have called President Jimmy Carter in the Rose Garden or wherever and said, hey, Mr. President, do you know what's going on? Do you know what's going on here, who they're talking to? And the whistle would have been blown. I mean, maybe not, but I can't believe you can keep a secret from the President of the United States or from the head of the FBI or the head of the CIA if they want to find out. Anyway, I'm going to do the 40 past the hour station break at 40 past the hour. We'll be right back after a station break. Okay, we are back tomorrow night here at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, Alan Dershowitz. Then at 11 p.m., TV sweep ratings and the unofficial American census. Stuff they found out in the census that you don't often hear about. That's coming up tomorrow night on these same stations. Jim in Blackwood, New Jersey. Hello.
Hi, Tom. First, one quick comment.
Yeah.
People still comment about your interview with Howard You Knew Who.
Yeah.
The local papers are reporting that one of the L.A. stations may start simulcasting soon to L.A. in addition to three cities here in the Northeast.
Well, that's been going on for some time, the talk that he may broadcast to
live at 3 a.m. West Coast time till whenever he signs off in New York, and they'll play it back. So just thought I'd tell or warn you.
Well, I think it would be delayed here from 6 to 9.
Okay, but just thought I'd...
I'm not up at that time listening to the radio.
Okay. I'd like to talk about the landmarks of the Hollywood area in the Los Angeles area.
Yeah.
Last year I was down in Orlando and visited there's two new attractions down there, the Disney MGM Studios at Disney World
right.
and the Universal Studios Florida. And I understand Paramount's going to open a studio too, but I don't think it will be open to the public. On the side of the old Boardwalk and Baseball Amusement Park.
In Orlando.
Near the whole area, about a 30-mile stretch.
Yeah, yeah.
And both those, the two parks open now. They have like a replica of Hollywood in its heyday. They have like the Chinese Theater and the Wallach's Music City and the Brown Derby restaurants. And of course, unlike the Hollywood, California, you don't see hookers, male or female, or crack dealers. Maybe Hollywood, California.
Yeah, if they want to be authentic, they ought to have some transvestite prostitutes walking around down there.
Well, maybe Hollywood, California should put a fence around the city, too, and charge $35 admission to keep the riffraff out.
No. Here the joke is, you don't have a pass to get into Hollywood, you have a pass to get out.
And although, one serious thing, and Disney MGM did have an actress on playing a homeless woman. I thought that was a little tacky.
Oh, that is tacky.
But,
very tacky.
Well, actually, I was thinking that the replica of Hollywood is heyday. Now, what is the Hollywood, California doing to save some of the landmarks out there?
Absolutely nothing. Virtually nothing.
Seems to me if the fathers and mothers got their act together, you could have a combination of Greenwich Village and the French Quarter. Now, I don't expect them to tear down a 72-building skyscraper and rebuild Schwab's, but I just think they should save what they have.
Well, we haven't saved what we had, and there, you know, every day here a little bit of the movies dies, and nothing can bring it back. The Brown Derby is gone.
At Hollywood and Vine?
Gone.
What's there now? It's like,
some other restaurant.
But the building's still there.
Yeah, the building's there. But the Brown Derby is gone, finished.
How about the one in Wilshire, shaped like the Derby?
Gone. They even tore down the building.
Hmm, sad. But it just seems to me, you know, that is a major tourist attraction, and they should try to, you know...
Well, what they have to do is they have to clean it out, okay? You just have to clean places like that out and make
Times Square.
And Times Square, and make them... attractive to tourists. Mm. And, for example, the courtyard of Grauman's now Man's Chinese Theater. It's a hellhole. It's a rent-a-car. It's a fast food. It's a tattoo parlor. It's all this crap up there. You know, that should be a nice plaza and with walkways and sidewalk cafes and places where people will come, spend money, and relax. You can't relax in Hollywood.
The one at Disney MGM is that way. It was like it was back in the 20s.
Let me tell you their plan out here. I listened to the radio one day about a year ago, and they had on Johnny Grant, who's the honorary chairman of the Hollywood Chamber of Commerce. And he and a guy out here named George Putnam, who's a good guy, he does a radio show in Los Angeles, were talking about upgrading Hollywood Boulevard. And one of them proposed this idea, that they build a glass booth at Hollywood and Vine, and they schedule a movie star to come in there and make personal appearances all day long, starting at 8 o'clock in the morning, that people would be able to walk up to Hollywood and Vine and meet a movie star in a glass booth.
They do that at the theme parks in Florida.
Yeah, but can you imagine Madonna going to a glass booth at Hollywood and Vine at noon to shake hands with her well-wishers? I mean, they'd have a riot out there for him.
Might be somebody like Wink Martindale, maybe. Somebody.
Yeah, right, or me.
But one more quick thing, Tom. Maybe to encourage the tourism, I wish maybe the L.A. police, and maybe from personal experience, a little sour grapes, but I wish maybe the police out there would kind of cut breaks to tourists like that who do bring money, because here in Blackwood, cops have told me that if somebody was from out of town, they would probably cut them a break for a minor violation like that. Because, I mean, if I get a ticket in South Jersey, it ruins my day. But if I get a ticket in vacation, it ruins my vacation.
You're at, very good point. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, bye-bye. David in Chicago. Hello.
Yeah, Tom.
David.
Yeah, I was listening, you know, before the 11 o'clock to your discussion with Norman Lear.
Yeah.
And there was a point there where you were discussing, where he mentioned the point that that something that he seems to be looking for more lately is, like, connections, like feeling, you know, connected with people. And,
right.
And so forth, and that things recently have been turning towards a throwback to religious values and so forth.
Right.
So the comment I wanted to make, and, you know, by no means do I mean to be preaching, which I'm not, you'll see.
Go ahead.
But the comment I wanted to make is I think that many, many people, tremendous numbers of people, have a very big misconception of what the function of religious value is all about. I think there's vast numbers of people that look at religion as a very compartmentalized, you know, thing that, like, that they go to their church or synagogue on whatever given day or whatever time of the year, if it's once a year, and they feel that this is, you know, their token to their religion, and they go back to the rest of their lives, which whatever that is on a personal level.
Right.
I think that's a very, you know, a strong misconception of what religion is about. I think, you know, if you take into account the fact that, you know, that the Creator created the entire universe, then I think that points in the direction of the fact that morals and ethics and religion, etc., is really meant to be, you know, an all-encompassing thing in the sense of really being, you know, lived out on a day-to-day basis.
Something we practice in our everyday lives and don't give lip service to on Saturday or Sunday.
Right, exactly. It's not just tokenism.
You're exactly correct. The other thing that I thought was interesting in Lear's presentation when he talked about the number of religions there are in this country, 2,600 different religions, who is one man, one woman, or one group to say, this is the way we are going to worship God in our society? I don't understand that. I don't understand why religion has got to be, as you say, this formatted thing where you go in one day a week or 2 days a week or one day a year, and that's religion. That is not what religion is.
Right. Well, as far as what you're saying about the 2,600 different religions, and the fact is that, you know, you're saying who is the right nobody has the right to say what religion, you know, which is the right religion. I mean, I feel that
I don't like people who claim they are the only ones who talk to God. I talked to God today, and here's what he said. You know, all these guys on television that, you know, I talked to God, and here's what God wants us to do.
Right, the holier-than-thou kind of attitude.
Just the holier.
Right.
And by the way, in this country, if we have 26 religions, you can practice any one of them, all of them, or none of them. You know, we have freedom of religion, and we also have freedom from religion. It's okay to be non-religious if you want to be in America.
According to American law, right.
The Constitution.
Can I make a comment about that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the comment is that I think that also is a bit of a misconception, because I think that you know, history has, you know, has well proven the point that when you leave the ultimate decision to morality up to society and mankind, that which is that intellect and philosophy is a very relative thing, and you know tremendous numbers of societies that were very supposedly very high intellectually and philosophically committed tremendous abominations that I don't need to mention, which you all know about.
Right.
I think you know you have to realize that man is not the ultimate arbiter of morality. I think you have to go to a higher source.
Thanks for calling, David.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye now. Let's also keep in mind, as David from Baltimore said here last night, I do not believe at the moment of creation God said, and one day there will be the United States of America, and this is the country upon which I grant my blessing and blessings to no other. I don't think that happened. Brian in Blairstown, New Jersey. Hello.
Yeah, good evening, Tom.
Good evening, sir.
You spoke last night. You were seemed pretty upset about politicians losing their touch with their constituents.
Yep.
And you were complaining about government.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I want to say to you and your listeners is, though, it's our own fault.
We've said that here night after night. We have only ourselves to blame for what we got.
And it's crazy because not even a third of us vote generally on an off presidential year.
And we vote on the wrong things. We vote on image. We vote on television commercials. We vote on appearances. We vote on manufactured emotions. And that's the wrong way to vote.
And we also keep voting in the incumbents. And if we could get rid of them, I don't care if you vote for a communist or a Maoist. Just get these people
Well, I don't know about a communist.
Well, you know,
I know what you're saying. Yeah, I know what you're saying. I think we should elect more mavericks.
I mean, get people out of the norm. I mean, we have people who have been serving on the Senate for, you know, 20, 30 years. And it's just crazy.
How long has Strom Thurmond been in the Senate of the United States? Too long.
Far too long.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, have a good night, Tom.
Bye-bye. Pausing for commercials, then continuing after these messages. And a part of tonight's show is brought to you by your True Value Hardware Store. Here's Gary in Dallas. Hello.
Hello, Tom.
Hi, Gary.
I just wanted to let you know how truly wonderful it is to have you on the lineup here on the Talk Radio 570 KLIF out of Dallas-Fort Worth here.
We're very pleased to be on the air there, but time is a-wasting, so please, your question or comment.
Okay. What I wanted to mention was the Rodney King deal is today pretty much the transvestite deal was kind of a sidebar to the real action of him trying to run down a police officer. And my question is, if somebody were to have gotten this on videotape, could they possibly have sold it as the Rodney Horror Picture Show?
No. I don't think so.
Take care, Tom.
All right, thank you. Here's Rich in Oakland Park, Florida. Hello.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
I can't believe I reached you.
All right, quickly now, Richard.
Come right to the point. Congressman John Doolittle, Republican of your state, California.
Right.
Introduced H.R. Resolution 211 proclaiming June 1 through June 7th, 1991 as National Polio Awareness Week.
Okay.
To complete the task, we need 218 co-sponsors. So I'm asking your audience to write or call the congressman of your state.
Okay.
And indicate the name, the House of Representatives. It should be sent to, to the honorable and then name the senator or congressman.
And it's in support of H.R. What's the number?
H.R. 211.
Okay.
The address is House of Representatives, Washington, D.C., 20515.
Let me ask you a question. Isn't polio a thing of the past with the
You know, I'm surprised you should say that, Tom. Polio is not a thing of the past. Many of us, over 50% it's estimated, are suffering from post-polio syndrome.
All right, let me, the time is short here. Write your congressman or senator in support of H.R. 211 at the Congress of the United States, Washington, D.C. Thanks for calling, Rich.
Okay, Tom.
All right, bye-bye. We'll see you all here tomorrow night, same time, same station, for the Thursday night radio show with Alan Dershowitz. I thank you all for listening. And I hope you'll come back tomorrow night. Sweet dreams and sleep tight, North America. From Los Angeles, good night, everybody. We are back with Bonnie Hunt from Davis Rules over on CBS at 8:30, and Beethoven with Charlie Grodin and 185-pound St. Bernard, whose name is Beethoven.
Right.
Haven't seen you since Milwaukee and Summerfest about 3 or 4 years ago. We had a good time out there.
Oh, we had a great time.
We laughed a lot, didn't we?
God, that's all we did. You were so funny that night, Tom. And you were good on the radio, too. Hey, wait a minute.
Easy now. Hey. Two Catholic kids.
That's right. Well, that's all we can do is talk about it. So.
No. You know, Grodin is, I'm not really a friend to him. I know him. I've interviewed him a couple of times, and he's always a delight to be around.
What a great guy.
And making a picture with him must be truly hysterical.
It was great. We laughed all the time, and I learned so much from him. He's truly a great professional, and so dry.
Oh, I know.
You know, you didn't know whether to laugh or he was serious, you know, and then about a week later you'd be driving and you'd laugh out loud, realizing what the whole gimmick was.
Right. He got a terrific review in the New York Times today. He wrote a play that opened last night at a theater on Broadway, and he just got a tremendous review.
Oh, I'm so happy. I'm so happy that he got that great review, because I knew it was opening, and I didn't send him anything because I like to save money in case I'm out of work. But
you're not cheap.
Now that it got a great review, maybe I will send something.
Speaking of cheapness, mm-hmm. Have you ever been around cheap people in your life? Don't they make you crazy?
Yeah, it's really horrible. I think, you know, the more you just say I'm going to tip big or spend the money when I have it, the more it comes to you in your life.
I think
my father was like that. I mean, he was always, you know, when he went out, he picked up the bill, and it was going to be a big night. And if he couldn't pick up the bill, he didn't go out for a couple of months.
Exactly.
You know, that was his thing.
And I mean, if you're going to leave a tip for the waiter, and the waiter's been out of sight, you know, make sure. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
One of the stories told about me that is the most, you know, people often will say to you, what's the most embarrassing thing that ever happened to you on camera or off camera, you know, as an actress? And they asked me the same thing. One night, Mary Steenburgen, is that the lady's name?
Mm-hmm.
Actress? She was on the air with Dave Letterman. And Letterman said, you know, of all the celebrities you've run across before you were famous, who was the cheapest? And she said Snyder, because he stiffed me. He didn't tip me when I was a waitress at the Magic Pan in New York. I have never stiffed a waiter in my life.
Well, that's horrible.
I know.
It wasn't true.
That wasn't true at all.
Make me sick. More than anything, if someone said that. Yeah.
But your pop was a big timer, right?
Yeah. That was. He worked hard for a living, and so he.
What was his job?
He was an electrician. Yeah, he was a great guy. He was just a great guy.
I don't know. I've had electricians in my house. And
well, he was a self-taught electrician.
I know.
This is a guy who did tons of jobs. You know, he had a gas station for a while before, you know, he ever met my mom, and her car broke down, actually, and she pulled into that station, and that's how she met him.
No kidding.
Isn't that a riot?
That's cute, yeah. It's very cute.
It's
where
like,
was this?
In Chicago.
Yeah,
on the south side. And, you know, the rest is history.
Yeah,
seven kids in 10 years.
The last time that I had... Very Catholic. The last time I had an electrician to the house, I had a little list of things, like a socket and a switch and a plug. And, you know, seven or eight little things that were making me nuts. And so this man came up. And I guess electricians, it's $45, $50 an hour nowadays, the rates in L.A. And this guy came in, and he fixed one wall switch, and all of a sudden, I didn't see him anywhere in the house. I'm looking around. I can't find this guy. And I go out front, and he's sitting in his truck, Bonnie. He's having a coffee and a Danish pastry. I said, you know, you're not through. He says, no. He says, I'm going to finish. But he says, I was getting weak. I said, $45 an hour, you're out here in the truck having coffee and Danish, and you're getting weak?
Gee, I'm going to pass out.
I'm getting weak, for God's sake. Give me a break. So anyway.
Well, things have changed.
I know, the work ethic
is much different now than it used to be.
Give me the thumbnail on Beethoven, okay?
Beethoven, it's about a family that is not struggling by any means. There's three kids. I'm the mother and wife to Chuck Roden, and he is one of those guys that just wants everything to be bigger.
Mm-hmm.
The house to be bigger, the car to be bigger, and his business to be bigger, everything to be great. And I'm kind of happy with the way
things are.
Thank you, Tom.
Welcome.
With the way things are. And
do you have a little trouble with things are?
Well, I had a six-pack before I came in, just to calm down.
I doubt it.
No. One Beer Bonnie was my nickname in college, so
one
that'll
beer
clear
and
that.
You were everybody's, yeah.
Oh, geez. No.
You know what's funny is I feel like I've known you my whole life. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, Tom. Anyway, we get this. My husband's always wanted to be perfect. The house is perfect. And this little puppy wanders into our house one day by accident that is lost. And we all assume that he's bought it for us, the kids and I. And we talk him into letting us keep it when we realize it's been a misunderstanding. And this dog kind of puts the dents in the house and makes the family a little kinder and nicer. And it's really sweet. It's like an old movie from the 50s.
Did you want Beethoven after you met the dog?
Oh, I loved him. I loved him so much. And I found a dog. We were shooting in downtown L.A., and it was about midnight, and there was this little stray dog all kind of beat up, and we were shooting on Lacey Street, and I brought her home, and my apartment didn't take dogs, so I had to move. So within shooting the movie,
You're
I moved.
You're kidding. You moved?
I moved.
For a dog that you found?
Well,
what,
you
are
know,
you, nuts?
Yes. There's a plain and simple answer. But now I have this dog. It's been a year, and I named her Lacey after the street we found her on.
Very good.
She's a great little buddy. She's a mutt.
Just a mutt.
Yeah.
Dog. Big dog, little dog?
She's little. About 40 pounds.
Yeah, little.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So she's this little sweetie pie, and it's great that I have her from the movie. I didn't name her Beethoven or anything.
No.
Just in case the movie didn't do well, I want to remind people of my mistakes.
Movie's doing pretty good, huh?
Oh, it's doing great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I told you my Beethoven story is
true.
Yeah,
tell it.
Yeah.
Okay.
When I was living in New York, I was coming from a friend's apartment after having dinner with her, and coming down in the elevator, there's a fella there with a St. Bernard dog. And by the way, in a New York elevator, this is an enormous dog. Jeez.
It's a couch,
know?
Yeah.
So, and, you know, they're so darn cute. I mean, they're beautiful animals, and they've got the smile of all time on their face. And I said, what's the dog's name? And she says, Beethoven. I says, oh, where's Beethoven going tonight? She says, he's going to go out to go through his movements.
We could have used that in the movie.
2, 3, 4
Yeah, that's right. And we'll be back.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, the other thing that you're working on, of course, is Davis Rules with Johnny Winters and Randy Quaid, who's just a great, great actor and a great, great guy.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
Remember him in Christmas Vacation?
No, I didn't see that.
Oh, God.
No, I'm just kidding. Yes, of course.
I'm going to throw something at you, Bonnie.
No, that he was hysterical. In fact, I saw a screening with Randy. We were at the same screening.
Uh-huh.
We have the same agent. So I laughed so hard. When he had that black dicky underneath that white V-neck sweater, we could see the outline.
Yeah.
I was hysterical. He was really funny in
and
there.
And then what was his dog's name, Snot?
Yes.
Remember? And the dog would do that all over.
Yes, constantly. Had a sinus condition that...
But Davis Rules, doing good, huh? Yeah. Highest rated sitcom, last year.
We're on CBS now, and CBS, we just finished 3 new episodes with CBS in charge. So, yeah, we had finished almost 13 by the time CBS bought us from ABC.
Right.
So now, with CBS touches, the show is a little bit different, and it's just, of course... The thing that we're most grateful for is to have Jonathan Winters on the show, because that's why people turn it on. I mean, they just want to see him.
Oh, come on. They turn it on for you, son. Well, they turn it on for Randy.
Yes,
some.
For Mainly Randy
for
and
Johnny.
Jonathan.
Sure, yeah.
For Randy and Jonathan. For me, they mostly for the TNA, you know.
You're not that kind of a woman.
Well, I am when the prop department gets through with me and the wardrobe department and the makeup girls. And no, I'm just a regular gal on that show. Quite a stretch, huh, Tom?
Mm-hmm, quite a stretch. What changed when you went to CBS? Because ABC had it for a while, and they're usually good at making something work. And they didn't come through for you guys this time.
Well, I wasn't on the show the last season. I was on the last episode. I was on a series called Grand that was on NBC.
All right.
The same producers, and we were canceled, so I went over onto Davis Rules.
It's nice they have all these shows, you know?
Yeah, nice for me, anyway. But I really took Davis Rules because I knew that it would be something different to improvise with Jonathan, and you know, you don't always do that in network television.
Mm-hmm.
And I was offered, you know, Saturday Night Live and Designing Women and Home Improvement, so it was a big decision, but I really wanted to go work with Jonathan and Randy, and because I knew them and we were on the lot together. But we got there, and I think that, I don't know if ABC knew what they were going to do with it, and we were kind of sitting there making making the shows, and it's difficult to just make shows and not have them on the air and not know what the response is. And so CBS took it. I don't know.
Yeah, usually if you make shows and they don't go on the air, they don't make those shows for very long, you know?
Yeah, I know.
They just kind of stop making
them. I kept
them.
Waiting for Alan Funt to walk in and just say, this is all a big joke.
He doesn't walk in much anymore. He's got Dom DeLuise doing all that stuff.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
So now, Saturday Night Live, you could have been a cast member there?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Tempting based upon your past, you know,
with Second City.
Second City comedy, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was tempted, but most people on Saturday Night Live end up leaving to go do prime time or
movies.
Right. And I was
since
doing
you're already
movie.
Doing that, why take the step, huh?
Right. But I wouldn't mind. I mean, you never know in the future. Maybe I would do it. I think the show's much better for a launching pad for men than it is for women. But, you know, you never know. I guess it depends on the person. But you just make decisions as you go along. You
I'm just thinking about what you said about better launch for men than women. Yeah.
Well, comedy is in general. I mean, sometimes if you're a woman in comedy, people expect you to act like a guy to be funny, and that's kind of not my thing. You know, I like to still be feminine.
And I can tell by tonight's dress that Bonnie's wearing.
Oh, all right.
Shirt,
well, I got the
shirt, cap, tie, gentleman's jacket. I mean, but I don't want to look like a guy.
Well, this whole outfit cost me $15. It was resale in New York at Reminiscence.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
Really? $15?
$15.
They had it in your size, too, kid. We're with Bonnie Davis. Bonnie Davis. Jeez, where did that come
That's
from?
That's all right. Just get the name right.
Bonnie Bedelia. Bonnie Hunt, folks, from Davis Rules and Beethoven. Now in theaters all across America. I was going to say, remember when it used to be the line theaters and drive-ins everywhere?
Oh, remember the drive-in? My dad, we used to go in the station wagon,
yeah.
Seven kids in the drive-in. Oh, what a scream. That was the... Remember you could do that when you had kids? You can go to the drive-in because
sure.
You don't want to... You're in the car, and if they scream, nobody cares. You know.
I didn't go to the drive-ins that way. I went...
Oh, well, you went with the dames.
You got it. You got it. With six-packs in Waukesha County, not in Milwaukee, because you could drink beer at 18 there, and we'd go out and...
Oh, that's right!
Sure.
You used to drive all the way there?
To Waukesha. And they had one called Weber's Wonderful Waukesha Beer. It tasted like panther urine.
That
it
was the name of a beer?
Weber's Wonderful Waukesha Beer. It was the worst, you know. They've got one here in town. Have you tried this, Bob? Eastside 102? I think they made them shut it down, because, you know, all you did was belch. It was unreal stuff, you know? God. Wow. But anyway, we drive them all out to Waukesha County, you know, and see all these pictures out there, and we stop and get a six-pack of Weber's Wonderful Waukesha Beer,
oh,
figuring
geez.
After a couple of six-packs, she was sure to go, right?
Oh, dear.
She went to the bathroom. Wow.
Oh, well, those are the breaks.
Ooh, man. Went through you faster than the...
That's the Catholic relationship, though. You just...
Oh, tell me about it.
When you're dating, you know, I did. I always thought if I ever won an award, the first thing I would do was apologize to all those men that I was dated, because I just would they would kiss me and I'd go see ya, you know.
More on that coming up. Back with Bonnie
Great.
Hunt, Davis Rules, and the movie Beethoven. We're going to pause for these messages from the local stations. We are back with Bonnie Hunt, Davis Rules, the television show, Beethoven, the movie. So anyway, it was a kiss and see ya.
Yeah, because then I thought they would come back to my door tap dancing or something. Because I grew up on all those movies. My mom, if there was a great Fred Astaire or Gene Kelly movie on in the middle of the night, she would wake us up to watch it. She would go, come on, you got to see this movie. So we would watch it. So when I started dating, I thought if I slammed the door in their face after they kissed me, they'd come back with a song written just for me and then with flowers. I was like, where are they? And they're all dumping me. And then I thought, well, they're not worth it because the one who's worth it, you know, does a whole musical around me. That was my perspective.
Yeah, the one who's worth it, huh?
Yeah.
That's how you saw us, huh?
Yeah.
The one who deserves me.
Honest to God, it's just terrible, you know.
Now, I'll tell you first. The first woman that I ever went to bed with was the woman I married after I married her. Don't you laugh at that.
No,
you were
not
brought up to believe in that.
No, I did believe in it.
Yeah, well?
The first woman I slept with was after I married my husband. I'm just kidding. I'm sorry. No, I believe that.
Well,
and you know what? I'm telling you, wouldn't that be just great if that's the way that it would be? I mean, it would be really great. If you think about the kind of relationships you would develop without sex.
That's right.
I mean, there would be such great foundation. It would be unbelievable. I was never able... I mean, I think that my husband and I have a pretty good friendship. We haven't tried sex yet, being both Catholic. We've only been married 4 years, but we're going to wait till we want to have children.
Right.
But he's a boy. He's like John Murphy. John Kelly Murphy is his name. Yeah, we're both like the guilt. I mean, we look at each other the wrong way. We go to confession and beg for forgiveness.
Get out of here.
Oh, it's just hysterical.
So, I mean, did you wait till you were married? Now that I've told.
Yes, I did.
Good for you. Officially.
I did.
Oh, well,
actually,
I mean...
there's nobody who can claim I didn't. That'll have any memory of it. My poor mother, Tom, in Chicago. Now she's saying the rosary.
Well, my mom is out in Milwaukee saying the rosary, too.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, but moms have to understand that every now and again, kids tell all when they get on the radio together.
Oh, my mom was so funny, you know. Well, why were you out with him for 3 hours? Mom, we were just out. I know human nature. And I'd be like, what does that mean? This is before I was even thinking about anything like
yeah,
that.
Right.
She actually put the idea in my head. I was like, I got to find out what she's talking about. I'd go off with the guy, what's this human nature thing? He goes, I don't know, but I'll tell you about something else. I mean, it was just, I didn't understand it.
Meet she human was, nature. Say hello to human nature. Two, three, four.
Oh,
button, here come your folks, yeah.
It's the truth. I mean, just, and my dad would be so funny because he would come outside, you know, whenever the curfew was, he'd be hanging out there in his bathrobe.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the plaid bathrobe with the belt that didn't match from another bathrobe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can I tell you that when my daughter got married a couple, two, 3 years ago, I wasn't too thrilled about it.
No.
In the beginning.
It's...
I wasn't too thrilled about it. But I've learned to be thrilled about it, you know. It's the natural order of things. But
it's tough. I think it's tough when your kids get married.
You know, my daughter and I were together the night before she was married, and there were a lot of tears, I got to tell you, because it's the last, you know, Father of the Bride. Then I went to see Father of the Bride, and I cried because I gave my kids such a dumb wedding compared to what they gave
her.
Well,
it's a movie. That's like me waiting for the guy to write a song for me.
Well, yeah, but, you know, you think about these things.
I know. My dad was gone for my wedding. I mean, he passed away about 10 years ago, but at least you were there.
Yeah.
It's a bonus.
Yeah. We will continue with Bonnie Hunt. I'm going to open the toll-free exchange at 800-756-0852. That's 800-756-0852. Back with Bonnie and as many of you as time permits. I always try and fill this up to the sting, right? To hell with it. Just run it up and we'll be right back after these messages. We are back with Bonnie Hunt, who, tell what you just told me about your tape and Johnny Carson now, because this is it, you know?
Yeah, I bought a bunch of blank videotapes, and I've been taping it starting a couple weeks ago, all the shows, because people are saying their goodbyes. I just, like I said to you, I feel like something's going to fall apart because Johnny Carson's not going to be on TV every night.
Me too. Where will we go? And this takes nothing away from Jay Leno or anybody else who's on, but John Carson has been a part of our lives. Since you're a baby, for heaven's sake.
Yes, you can always rely on, he's always there.
Yeah.
Well, see what's happening on Johnny, you know. I mean, that's just part of your life. And to think that it's not going to be there is just unbelievable to me.
It'd be like if you tuned in the morning and the Today Show weren't there.
Right.
Or something like that.
And he's just the greatest. I've been on the show with him several times, and he
me too.
Makes you feel so comfortable and encourages you and very gracious. Lets the guest have their moment.
There's a great article on Carson. He's on the cover of the new
Life magazine.
Yeah. Calvin Trilling wrote a piece, and he said what you said. You know, a lot of times people would criticize Carson over the years because he didn't extract the biggest amount of news from a guest. That's not what he does.
Right.
He shows Bonnie Hunt at her best.
Yeah,
whoever goes on there, if they have a big laugh, he lets them have it.
That's right.
He doesn't take their moment away from them.
Yeah, that's really, really what's so great about him.
And he realizes the secret of this business is, I mean, every guest who comes in here, I want to be a big hit. Because if you're big, I'm big with you.
Mm-hmm.
You let me share it.
Boy, that's the secret,
yeah,
boy.
Yeah,
that's...
So Johnny said many years ago and told me. Martha in Cincinnati, Ohio. Hello.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Martha. How are you? Say hi to Bonnie.
I can't imagine Tom Snyder or Bonnie Hunt not in my life.
Thanks.
You people are very good people.
Thanks.
Thanks, Martha.
And I've been trying to get a hold of you for a long time, and I finally got through. Bonnie, I want to say that I love Davis Rule.
Thanks.
And Jonathan Winters, I know he ad-libs and breaks you up, doesn't he?
Well, we actually, Jonathan and I ad-lib quite a bit. I'm from Second City, which is an improvisational theater, and the two of us get together and kind of go off. The second take will never look anything like the first take, and the third take is even further away from the script, and the fourth take is from a whole different show altogether.
I was kind of worried there for a couple weeks you weren't on, and I thought, oh, they didn't take it off. But you're back, and it's great.
Martha, there's no whining here.
No whining.
No whining.
Okay.
No whining. What are you doing for Easter, kid?
Well, we're going to have ham.
Yeah, me too, you know.
And I don't like ham.
I like ham better than turkey. I mean, at least you don't have to cover it with gravy to get it down, you know.
Turkey, I mean, yeah, right. And I just, Tom, I've been trying to get a, you know, when you just have your regular hour where you...
Would you like me to leave, Martha?
No.
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
I love you both, but this is the first time I called. And
I know. Tom's a great guy. I used to try to get through to him on the radio, too.
I mean, he keeps me up all night. I mean, I'm up all night listening. I listen to him one place, and then I get him on the other, and I don't know, Tom, since I found you on the radio.
Martha, you really have to get out more, you know that?
I just love that. And I love what you say. I mean, I've been trying to call you since the night you said Roseanne Barr and Tom Arnold, they have to go in their bedroom and laugh.
Oh, God, when they go
I
in
I can't believe anybody thinks like I'm thinking.
I know, but I sat here one night, Bonnie, just to bring you back in the conversation for a moment or two.
No, go ahead, honey. I'm interested in this.
I said, you know, Roseanne and Tom Arnold, when they go in their room at night, you know, they must close the door and say, man, did we fool them again tonight?
I love it. I hope they do.
Anyway, Martha, here's the problem I have with ham. And do you cook, Bonnie?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you serve with ham? Like, you can't serve mashed potatoes and gravy.
Sweet potatoes.
I hate
yams.
Sweet.
Yeah, I'm not a sweet potato fan.
No. What
but
do you
my mother used to cover them with marshmallows.
Okay, how about baked beans and potato salad?
Yeah, I don't like potatoes.
That's fine if you've got paper plates and you're outside.
My favorite people on here, and I'm talking about ham.
Well, it's you're bringing up the topic.
Okay.
Oh no, I guess we did. But ham's an appropriate topic.
Tom did.
Yes, you're right.
I never know what to serve with ham though.
Potatoes.
I can't think of anything
beans,
either.
Ham, sweet potatoes, and
green beans.
Beans and mm-hmm. and look out.
Yeah. Anyway, Martha, have a happy and thanks for the call.
I want to.
What?
I have to go, don't I?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, unless you got another question.
Hey, I love you.
Okay, we love
you. Bye, Martha. Have a nice Easter.
Love you back, Martha. And
I'll be watching. You go on vacation, Tom, right?
I'm gone next week. Color me gone.
Lucky you.
Yep.
Go see the movie Beethoven, Martha.
I can sleep next week. Bonnie, I'll watch you Wednesday.
Okay.
Tom, listen to you next Wednesday.
All right, thanks, hon. I'll talk
bye,
to you soon.
Love
bye-bye.
You.
Love you back. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Good. Bill, Savannah, Georgia. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Bill.
Hi, Bill.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Good.
Listen.
No, you listen.
coming back from the hospital, I'm a physician, mm-hmm. and you will never believe what I was doing. I was treating a nun. And I don't know whether I got the whole...
Well, what was the matter with the dear sister?
The sister hurt her, broke her foot.
Uh-oh.
And in any event, I am a born and raised Catholic down here, attended Catholic schools from kindergarten all the way through and down here in Savannah. And it just kind of made me feel good to hear you all talking about it.
Yeah.
It seems like the church gets kind of trashed a little bit.
Not here it doesn't. Not Holy Mother Church has never been trashed here.
Well, maybe not on your program,
no.
But on other programs. And I just wanted to kind of tell you I appreciated it and that I am very privileged to be able to treat, believe it or not, the nuns that taught me in grammar school and the priests that I went to a Catholic military school here in Savannah and to treat these priests and what they gave to me is it can't be measured. I don't know what to say.
It's obviously.
That the things that they instilled in me and are great.
How about when the sister wrapped you across the knuckles with the ruler or yanked you by the ear down the hallway or wouldn't let you go to the bathroom when you had it so bad?
Let me tell you. One time, I was taught by Sisters of Mercy. And
I'll bet at times you felt that they had none.
Oh boy, I'll tell you, the nuns really—they did a number on me.
So they were dressed in the old habits.
Yeah, my nuns, the nuns at my school were all in the black habits.
Huh?
That same with the school I went to—they were all in the black habits.
Were they Sisters of Mercy?
BVM.
Okay, well, these nuns...
They used to spray paint it on the side of the building like a gang.
BBM.
Yeah, well, I was in school one time, and they had these, like a large set of rosary beads that they tied around their waist.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, they had those with me, too.
Yep.
Yeah, and one time I was throwing spitballs and having a big... big time, and the nun was in the back of the room, and I thought I was getting away with murder.
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing I remember, I heard the rattle of the rosary beads, and
yep.
the next thing I know, I was picking myself up off of the floor.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, they'd walk so slow down those halls, but all of a sudden, when you're doing something wrong, they could move
right.
faster than.
Exactly.
Or,
right.
or you turn around, and there they are, right
oh,
there, right on top of you. You know, sneak up. I hate a sneaky nun. You know.
Was you know, we hated it then, but the worst part mm-hmm. was that if my mother and father found out about it.
Oh.
I got it even worse when I got home.
Same here.
You know, and I just...
Hey, Bill, come up for air.
Pardon me?
Come up for air.
I just hope that we can continue with this. I really hope that the government will...
The government?
What are you talking about, Bill?
You're just saying that you wish the world was a nicer place.
No.
I'm so sorry.
I'm saying...
You wish there was more nuns.
I think that...
I wish
that
this goal were over.
I'm saying that I think that we should... That the government be able to give us money...
Oh, dear.
Rather than public schools, I think what's the term that they use?
Private schools, you know. And I'll tell you what they're doing now, Bill. They're advertising in Los Angeles in the papers. Catholic schools are buying ads urging people to send their kids to Catholic schools because of the qualities of education that are not offered in the public schools. Bill, thanks for the call. Appreciate you joining us tonight from Savannah, GA. Used to work there on the radio station that you're now listening to, AM 630. Right back with Bon. Oh, yeah, when the nuns wouldn't let you go to the lavatory.
That was horrible. I thought that was the worst.
Well, see, you
could go once in the afternoon and once in the morning.
Yeah.
And if you didn't go then, you will not get another opportunity.
That's right. Lavatory yeah. pass.
Yeah.
Where did the word lavatory come from?
I don't know, but I always thought there was going to be a mad scientist in the room down the hall. They were just like, do you want to go to the lavatory? And I'd say, well, gee, I don't know. Am I sick? I didn't. And then I figured out, you know, all of a sudden that became the bathroom.
Yeah, well, when you see the commodes in there, it's not too swift a synapse, is it?
It's funny when you go back to your grammar school and you see it looks like somebody put it in a dryer. It's so, everything's just so little.
Oh, I know.
It's so funny.
It was so big then.
I know. It was a mansion.
Back with Bonnie Hunt. Bill and Savannah, thanks for the call. We will continue after these messages from the local stations. We're back with Bonnie Hunt, Davis Rules, Wednesdays, 8:30 p.m., CBS, with Randy Quaid and Jonathan Winters, Davis Rules, and also Beethoven, the movie with Charles Grodin.
Three great guys. I've been lucky.
Who else is in this picture?
Patricia Heaton, David Duchovny, these two actors. Patricia's on a show with... They're great. She's on a show now.
I didn't say they weren't.
No, I'm just saying that they're great, so I don't appear competitive.
Mm-hmm.
Dean Jones is in it. Dean Jones is in it, Tom.
You went to nursing school.
Yeah, I was a nurse.
Wow.
Yeah, at Northwestern.
That's great.
Yeah, I was a nurse when I started working at Second City. I was still working as a nurse, and then I finally quit.
Did you, like, in a hospital? Or...
Yeah, Northwestern University downtown.
You're kidding.
Yeah, I was in oncology, in the oncology department.
Oh, that's a tough department.
Well, yeah, tough for the patients. I mean, they certainly go through the most
yeah.
of everything. But
yeah.
I it was a wonderful experience. And whenever I'm back in Chicago, I volunteer at the VA out there. I did this past break. And
you know, it's funny. I dated a girl at Marquette who was in the nursing department, and you know how guys are, we're nuts, you know.
Yeah.
You know, we're gonad nuts. We would always think that if she was in nursing, man, she must really be hot because they were always working with the body.
Yeah, you know everything.
Yeah,
right.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was so stupid. I mean, you know, it's so dumb. And
now that you've met me, yeah.
And I mean, then, no, but
I'm
I mean,
just kidding.
I mean, I'd take this girl, and at Marquette, you know, when you took them home to the dormitory.
Right.
I mean, you could play baseball out there on the front steps at night. There was so much candle power out there. I mean, you know, you could shoot a camera with no problem out there
right.
because it was so bright because they were watching
yeah,
from inside.
Yeah, making sure
nobody got a smacker, you know,
mm-hmm.
or if it was, it was on the cheek. And, I mean, I took this girl back to the dormitory, and later that evening, you know, when I was back at the student union with my male cronies, they said, well, how did it go with the nurse? I
right.
said, strike out, you know.
Oh, God. Well,
there's a lot of pressure on us back then. You know what I mean, Bon?
I know, it's, honey. It's tough. I know.
Don't honey me.
Well, you're lucky you didn't date me. I would have been expecting you to write a song for me.
I know. You want to start the honey stuff? Put on.
Did
the...
I call you honey? I'm sorry.
That's okay.
That's my mother. She does that.
That's
and then...
okay. I call everybody honey too.
Oh,
I really
geez.
Do. I call guys honey.
Oh dear.
But you know how come?
Why?
There was a commercial on the on television here about 2 years ago for a the stuff you put on tortilla chips. You know what I mean? Salsa.
Yeah, salsa. Huh?
Yeah, and paste picante sauce.
Right.
And they're all in the diner, and I think Jonathan Winters did this commercial, and she runs out of paste picante sauce, and she puts a different brand on the counter.
Oh right.
And they taste it, and they say, "Wait a second, this ain't paste from Texas. This stuff's made in New York City." And they look up at the gal behind the counter and say, "Honey, we're going to have to shut you down." So since then, I say, "Honey."
That's right.
Yeah. But, I mean, the last person that called me honey is, had a blue negligee and sat on the edge of the bed.
Well, here's, how funny that I'm wearing that right now.
You know, if you can get this funny stuff onto the Davis Rule Show,
yeah, we have a hit on our hands.
We'd still be at ABC. Brad in Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin. Hello.
How's it going, gang?
Well, oh, no,
Brad,
we're so depressed.
You tell us, Brad.
Well, I'm telling you, I was getting there. Who's screening calls tonight, Tom?
Lisa's on the phone.
Oh, gosh, she's making me nervous. She's on there every 2 or 3 minutes telling me, you're next. Tell her to back off. But
oh, anyway. My sister's out there with her. My sister Kathy's here visiting, and she keeps bugging her to try to get in to see me, but I don't see the family anymore now that I'm making the big money.
No.
Yeah, well, you don't need them anymore.
I don't need them, no.
You're getting stuck up or something?
What, honey?
Yeah,
oh.
Getting stuck up. No.
Am I?
No. It was just, forget it.
Oh, you were making a joke, and I didn't hear it because I was too busy talking.
Well, that's okay. You get paid to do that. Anyway, my question is, you've already admitted, and it's very obvious, you know, that Jonathan Winters ad-libs a lot during the show.
Yep.
Right.
And you're so animated on there. Do you ever ad-lib, impromptu at all?
Yes, a lot of my stuff is improvised.
I saw the show, gosh, can't think when the first time was, but... Then since then, I started having to work on Wednesday nights, so I had to buy a VCR to tape it.
Oh.
There you go.
But I love it, though.
Yeah, it's a cute show, and Jonathan and I improvise quite a bit. I mean, we whenever we can, we throw a little something in. And if we don't do it then, we improvise after the writers have written the script, and we kind of go out to them and tell them what we might do with the scene, and they kind of work with us, and we work with them, and it's a great team effort.
Sure. And my other question is, when you are on SCTV, is... The characters, Doug and Bob McKenzie, were you back then?
No, I was at Second City, the theater. I wasn't on SCTV. SCTV was a group of people that were from Canada, mostly.
Okay.
And they were part of the Second City Theater.
I was going to ask, was Randy Quaid, was he the character of Doug McKenzie?
No, that was Rick Moranis and Dave Thomas.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Brad, thanks pal.
Much.
All right, have a happy weekend up
I will,
there.
You too.
Okay, by the way, Brad, before you go.
Yeah.
Has spring come to Door County, Wisconsin?
Oh, here and there. It's spring, and then it snows, and then it's spring, and it rains. So, yeah, I guess that's
all right. Okay.
Wisconsin winter.
Be well. Thanks, Brad. Happy Easter, Brad. It's over. We will continue with more of you on the toll-free exchange here on the full moon edition of the radio show. We'll be right back with Bonnie Hunt. More of your calls and stuff after these messages. Okay, we are almost out of here, but we do have time for... wait, I can't see without these things on. Mary Lou, right? Mary Lou in Chicago. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Mary Lou.
Hello there. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Mary Lou.
Listen.
You listen.
Yes, I'm here, honey.
What part of the South Side?
Did my parents meet?
No, did you grow up?
No, I grew up west of Wrigley Field. The northwest side of the city. That's where I grew up. My parents met, though, at a place near the south side.
Ask him.
My mother's name was Alice Jacek, was her maiden name.
Oh, Polish-like.
Polish-like, yes.
Yeah.
Right on the mark.
My father was Irish.
Oh, may the good Lord. Mm-hmm. Ask him if he had any masses said, Tom, about that... accident in San Francisco that he preceded it by an hour.
Oh, you're talking to me?
Yeah.
You mean when I was on the highway out there on Highway 5?
Yeah.
No, I didn't have any masses said.
You didn't receive my letter?
No, I didn't. I did not get your letter.
Well, you know, in Thanksgiving, Right?
Oh, I see what you're saying. You know something? I'm going to do that.
God bless.
I will do that. That's a very good suggestion, Mary Lou.
Well, Sister Mary Holywater at St. Agnes would have recommended that.
Yes, she would have. Yes, she certainly would have.
You were St. Agnes, weren't you?
Yes, ma'am, I was. Well, were you in Milwaukee then?
No, sir. I'm Chicago on the way. Westside Irish.
Yeah, what parish are you in now, Mary Lou?
St. Margaret Mary's on the north side.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, have a great Easter, young lady, and God bless you.
And the same to yourselves, I'm sure.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Doesn't take long to get back home, does it?
Huh? That's so cute.
So what are you doing Easter, kid?
I'm going to my brother Pat's out here, living out here now with his wife, Jane, and their two kids, Bobby and Patrick.
Okay.
And my sister, Kathy, and I are going to go and spend Easter Sunday with them. But
oh,
we're going to miss
nice.
The gang in Chicago because the rest of my brothers and sisters and my ma are out there.
Okay, so it'll be kind of like almost a bi-coastal celebration, huh?
Yes, but they
very
will be
good.
With us in spirit.
Very, very good. Mm-hmm. And you'll probably be having ham.
Yeah, maybe ham.
Yeah. Hey, mm-hmm. Kathy, what are they having for dinner Easter Sunday? Do we know? Ham, you think? At your brother's house? Yeah.
Yeah,
ham.
She thinks hams.
Yeah.
Or Big Macs, I think she said.
Oh, please, please. Anyway, young lady, it's always a delight to have you
on this
program.
Oh, thanks. Thanks so much, Mr. Snyder. I swear to God, I had the best time.
What's this, Mr. Snyder?
I'm Catholic.
I'm not a priest.
Could have been.
Bonnie Hunt. Davis Rule, CBS. Yeah. Geez, it almost slipped away there, kid. I'm on vacation.
That's
after,
okay. You're taking off.
Yeah. It almost kind of faded out there. Bonnie Hunt, Davis Rule, CBS, 8:30 Wednesday.
Right.
And then, of course,
Beethoven.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, you can go see it with the whole family. It's nothing embarrassing and
yeah, but the
lots
dog,
of yucks.
But the dog is naked. I'm T.S., and this is the Friday Night Radio Show out of ABC in Los Angeles, California. On many of these same stations, we are coming right back. Good evening, folks. Welcome back, everybody. This is the telephone connection of the radio show for late on Friday, early on Saturday, the 17th of April, 1992. In repeat programming tonight, we have a terrific show tonight, my friends. From the Philadelphia Inquirer, Donald Bartlett and James Steele, America, What Went Wrong? And then one of my favorite people, young actress named Bonnie Hunt, who's in Davis Rules, and in the movie with Chuck Grodin called Beethoven. Great show and repeat programming if your station does that. Always fun to talk with Bonnie Hunt. She is a cutie pie, I'll tell you. Great, great gal. Had her sister Kathy with her tonight. They're Chicago gals. And they're going to have a big Easter dinner out here at her brother's house. You know what's interesting about young women like Bonnie Hunt and her sister? You can tell what great people her parents are. And you can tell how they watched out over these kids as they were growing up. You know, it just leaps off their... By the way, the same is true of Lisa. Very true. You know, your parents done good by you. And Bob and I, of course, are perfect. You know, we are perfection. You know, we understand that. We've known this for a long time, and we understand how difficult it is for people in our lives to bask in our reflected glory, but it's okay. You know, we understand. But you can tell with Bonnie Hunt and her sister. Great, great gals. Great family. I guess her mom listens to us back there in Chicago every night on WLS, AM and FM. We do good back in Chicago, too, by the way. They invited me to come back, but I couldn't go. It was one day, and it was just inconvenient to go there. But I will, I'll get back to the Midwest sometime this year. Gotta go. Miss the Midwest. Go back there. You know what's great about going home? You know what's great about being any place other than California? Especially Southern California. Like, I was talking with Bonnie Hunt and her sister about a restaurant in Chicago that's one of my great, great favorites. And I can mention this because I don't live there. They have never bought me a free dinner, nor will I ever allow them to buy me a free dinner. The restaurant is named Gene and Giorgetti's. And it's in a neighborhood where if this restaurant weren't there, you would never go there. It's kind of a rough neighborhood in Chicago. So I'm told. I've never had a problem there. My mother and father used to rave about Gene and Giorgetti's. It was my dad's favorite restaurant in Chicago whenever they would go down there from Milwaukee. You can go in there and you can order a double Kansas City sirloin, finest meat in Chicago, the restaurant. And nobody looks at you like you're weird. I mean, if you go into a restaurant in Southern California and you order a sirloin steak, a New York strip sirloin steak, They look at you like you're some kind of a pariah.